Okay, thank you. Thank you both. Just to begin, can I get a little bit of background information from both of you? Where you grew up, how you were raised, and the way you were raised, how did that affect the way you viewed people of different races, different cultures, different religions? Stephen, can we start with you?
Sure. Again, Stephen Tucker, President and CEO of Northland Workforce Training Center. I'm originally from Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been in West New York now for 3 years. Back in my hometown in Cincinnati, Ohio, I was raised by a two-parent household, both mother and father, middle-class neighborhood. I went to Cincinnati Public Schools, and I was always taught to treat people fairly, also have integrity, and to also be trustworthy, and really try to judge people for their character more so than anything else. So I think I've been able to live that out throughout my life. I actually was in the military, the United States Air Force, for 4 years, from 1986 to 1990, which also reemphasized those values that my parents instilled in me. I also grew up in a church household. So do unto others as others do unto you. The golden rule has really been something that I try to live my life by.
And Paul?
Could you just repeat the question again, just to make sure I had it right?
In what ways did your upbringing, you know, how were you raised, and in what ways did your upbringing affect the way you viewed people of different races, cultures, and religion?
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. And you want me to record it on my end, right, if I can?
Yes, please.
Sure. Okay. Thanks again. So I was born 1961 and into a Catholic family, Eugene and Carol Vukolic. I was part of a family of 8 children, 6 boys and 2 girls. Grew up primarily in Orchard Park, New York. I'd say basically your typical white suburban environment. Went to public school in Orchard Park through the 8th grade, and then Canisius High School in the city. And I can say probably back at the Canisius High School back at that time, probably about 3 to 4% of, I would say, my class was either black or Hispanic. I was raised primarily, obviously, by my mother and father. And my mother was a homemaker, considered a homemaker back in that day. And then my father was running the family business at the time, rebuilding the family business from the fact that when he took it over, it was in pretty rough shape. So glad to say the family business is now in its 4th generation. Obviously, I was raised pretty similar to the way Stephen was, you know, to respect others, hard work. Obviously, in owning a family business, hard work, attention to detail, respecting others' beliefs, the whole nine yards. So, but again, how do I view, or how did I grow up viewing other cultures? I would say it was more from a curious standpoint more than anything else. You know, I think I grew up in the white family that I did, and the stereotypes of the age, primarily Jewish, black people. You know, I probably can't say how many times I heard, you know, this Jewish person was one smart Jew, for example, or hearing, boy, that black person when he spoke was very articulate. So, again, dealing with a lot of that, those biases, and hearing those biases, I'm sure certainly, you know, formed a little bit of who I was. But like I said, I can say I was mostly curious and open to meeting other people of other cultures and other colors. And I think I primarily got that from Canisius High School. That was really my real first experience in having both black classmates and black friends.
Now, Stephen, Paul brought up an interesting point. When a white person says, "Oh, this, African American person speaks articulately. I've had that said about me. I'm sure you've had that said about you. When you hear that, what goes through your head?
It used to didn't bother me as much as it does now. And when I say now, when I say used to, I'm talking about when I was younger, maybe in my high school years. But really what they're saying is the expectation is for minorities not to use proper English, or they are surprised if a minority can communicate effectively or is articulate. So that is a stereotype that is out there. But I don't hear it as much as I used to. And like I said before, in high school, I really wasn't offended by it. But once I got older, it was, something that we had to deal with.
And from your end, Stephen, what does white privilege mean to you? How have you seen it? Can you give me some examples?
Yes. And the first question, what does it mean to me? I actually, again, didn't really, I don't want to say understand it, but it wasn't necessarily, I saw a situation as white privilege because that was just the way it was. And when that's the norm, you don't really have a name for it. But an example of what I have experienced or what I have seen, for instance, if me, a minority, when I'm pulled over by the police, I have to, yes, sir, no, sir. Don't necessarily challenge the officer. Whereas I've seen my white counterparts, the first thing that they say is, why did you pull me over? Or they may have an argument or a disagreement with the police officer, which is something that I was raised not to do. So that, in my opinion, that's a example of white privilege. But again, at the time, I'm not knowing that there's a term for that. It was just, that was the expectation and that was the norm.
And Paul, what does white privilege mean to you? Where have you seen it? And can you give me some examples?
Yeah, so white privilege is sort of kind of I got to give my wife, Amy, credit here, because really she helped me really understand white privilege through the work she does in the community, in the social justice arena. So when we first started having conversations around it, I have to admit that I had real issues acknowledging and really accepting it, quite honestly. It's probably harder it's hard for me to accept it, and it's just hard to accept that you're privileged, right? So, and especially when you relate it to, the color of your skin. So it took me a while, really, quite honestly, to, like I said, acknowledge and accept it. But now that I have, and I understand it better, thanks to my wife, I'll again give her credit for that. But I look at white privilege as basically a built-in advantage, that we have as a member of the majority race. And just means for me having greater power and resources than people of color that are there in the same situation. So, again, like Stephen said, I think examples that I can articulate are, again, I'm less likely to be followed or interrogated, right, or searched by the police. I think people of color are more likely to be charged and incarcerated for low-level drug offenses, obviously, and that's been in the news a lot lately. And some of the examples I guess I've seen, and again, it's just observing, and like Stephen said, I just was driving home on Friday, this past Friday, and I go by the airport, see a New York State trooper parked along the side of the road with a car there, and I probably could have guessed it was going to be a black man in there, a black woman, and sure enough, it was. And while my wife and I were working on our house the last couple of years in the city, we lived out in Williamsville, closer to her work, and I can't tell you the amount of times that any time I saw somebody pulled over the side of the road by a police officer, it was a person of color, right? So you got to figure what's, what's going on. I think closer to home, I can say that when I first joined the family business, we had a couple, probably one or two black salesmen that worked for us. And I was in the process of making some route changes and putting one of them, because they were doing a great job, on another route, primarily in a white area. And I was told at the time I couldn't do that because that person wouldn't be accepted in the route that I was putting them in. So that sort of kind of really hit me pretty hard there. And then recently, probably in the last year, I went to a Boys Buffalo event and heard a story. It was on education and on a lot of discipline that takes place in the public school system. I remember hearing a story of a refugee family telling a story about their 5-year-old refugee child that was suspended for 3 days because he was running in the hallways. So here you have a 5-year-old being suspended at that early of an age. And then also what that does to the family. So now both at this time, both family, the parents were both working. One of them had to get off work to pick up this 5-year-old kid from school. So I can't imagine that happening to a white child of 5 years old.
So right now I'm going to take a pause. So, Paul, if you want to stop your recording so you have that chunk and then restart, just let me know when you're ready.
So I did stop it. Do you want me to send it to you?
You can send it to me when it's all when we're all done.
Okay. Okay. So I went ahead and did that. Very good.
Okay. So you're back on.
One second here. Okay. Yep. I'm good to go.
Perfect. So my next question is about the effects of race and racism. They're pretty much unavoidable. But as business leaders, how significant is it for folks in your position to promote inclusivity and racial integration in the workplace? Paul, we'll start with you.
Sure. Start my recording here. So I think it's imperative that we as business leaders promote inclusivity and integration. This is why I became a founding board member of Open Buffalo, and also whose mission is to advance racial and economic and ecological justice. I'm also a founding member of the Greater Buffalo Racial Equity Roundtable. And we were started as a group of 35 community leaders that were tapped to advance racial equity and promote change, which was required to accelerate the shared regional responsibility. Sorry, let me say that again. Yeah, just to accelerate a shared regional prosperity, and that's why we were formed. So as business leaders, I think we lead by example, right? We need to support organizations of color and organizations that serve these communities. We also need to prepare our management teams on what it means to be black and American. I think that's really important. I think in doing my work with the Greater Buffalo Racial Equity Roundtable, we as leaders, can certainly understand that. But for this really to take hold, we really have to take it to our management, our supervisor level people, and people on down. So therefore, we need to provide the training programs, like the racial equity impact analysis that we're doing right now through the racial equity roundtable. And I think to this date we've brought this to 1,900 leaders in the area, both in government, education, and business.
And Stephen, how significant is for people in your position to promote inclusivity and racial integration in the workplace?
I think it's critically important, not only for our region, but for our country. I don't think we will be able to reach the full potential of our nation unless we have a diverse, inclusive, and equitable workforce. That's the only way that we can all really live up to the American dream. And for an individual like me, 53 years old, I think it's important for me to demonstrate and be a role model for younger African Americans, and show them the way to collaborate so that everybody can have an opportunity to have access to quality education, great jobs, a family life, and a social and community environment where everybody feels safe and valued. And I look forward to working with all leaders in West New York to promote that. And I think as long as we are able to have these courageous conversations like we're having today, we'll eventually get there.
Now, is there difficulty in doing that, in promoting? I mean, to say it is one thing. Yes, we want more inclusivity, more diverse workforce. Yeah. But to put the words into action, there's got to be some difficulty trying to bring everyone on board with that idea.
Yeah, if this was easy, it would have happened years ago, and it is difficult and it is challenging. But I think one of the first steps in the process is we have to be open-minded to one another, and then we have to educate one another and be comfortable with having those courageous conversations. If you have a question about someone of a different race or a different culture, having a conversation with them, learning and increasing your knowledge about those cultures and your understanding about those traditions will make you more accepting to them. And when we get down to it, I believe we'll find that we have more in common than we don't. And that's how you begin to have the type of society and the type of communities that I think we're all looking for.
Paul, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, I would agree with Steve. And I know it's very, very difficult. I can tell you that. And that's why this work is so important. I run a business out here in Lancaster, New York. Most of the people that I employ have to have transportation. So either, you know, because if you live in the city of Buffalo, you got to drive out to Lancaster. And I can tell you transportation, if you work inside my building, of which only about 20% of our employees do, if you have to take a bus out here, you have to walk another mile and a half to get to my warehouse. So there's not even public transportation to my building. On the second front, transportation-wise, 80% of the people that work for me have to have cars, if they have a vehicle. Which I think is another, you know, barricade to people working in my business if you don't have transportation. So all my people just don't work in a factory. So very, very difficult, no doubt about it. So that's from the, just from the physical place where my building is, right?
Mm-hmm. And Paul, from the perspective of a white man, what do you think you don't understand about African Americans?
What I don't understand?
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I mean, probably the biggest thing I don't understand is what it means to be in a black man's shoes. What it means to walk around every day in a society that doesn't treat them fairly like they do me as a white man, right? So I would say that's the biggest thing I don't understand is what it's like to walk in their shoes.
And Stephen, from the perspective of a black man, what do you not understand about white people in America?
That's a great question, and I'm not trying to be controversial or anything, but the biggest thing is why, and this is a generalization, right, but I heard a minister say this before, and when he said it, it kind of resonated with me. Why would you hate us as much as you do, right? Which is a powerful statement. That's a strong statement, right? But sometimes that's how it feels. And that's the question that many minorities want to ask people who have the policies, who have the different ideals about their culture or about how we work in harmony in this country together. That's, you know, that would be my question.
And my last question concerns the city of Buffalo, but also Western New York. This area remains one of the most racially segregated places, especially the city of Buffalo, racially segregated cities in the country. Looking through the lens of a business leader, what needs to be done to build a more racially harmonious and equitable Buffalo and Western New York? Stephen, you can start.
I think Paul's words when he talked about what question, right? The last question you talked about not having or not being able to know how it feels to walk in an African American man's shoes, right? That's huge, right there. Just having that conversation and having that openness and willingness to want to learn, I think that's where it has to start. And then we have to be open to educating one another so that we can start to remove the fears that we have between all of us.
And Paul?
Yeah, just one second. Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks, Thomas. Yeah, I'm just going to build up, first of all, before I answer that, on what Stephen just said, too, is the one thing I think is really important for us is white people in general, but certainly as business white business people, is that first and foremost, we have to have empathy. Have to have empathy for this, for people like Stephen, anybody else in the community who is black. We have to, you know, and before we have empathy, we have to understand, right? We have to do our homework up front. That's what I talked about earlier, to really fully understand. And that's what I had to do to certainly understand my own biases and my white privilege. So I think that's first and foremost, have to do that. And then when you relate it to us as business leaders, and again, this is some of the stuff I'm doing right now in the community through both the Greater Buffalo Racial Equity Roundtable and as well as the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. And we're embracing the work of, you know, both of them. We're doing things like I'm going to really promote that other business leaders read the dividend report that was developed by the Racial Equity Roundtable. A lot of really good information in there, and why it's good for us as business leaders to embrace that, because we're coming down the road where we're all going to need the people resources to help grow our businesses, and that includes people of all color. And there's four areas that we report on. That's education, there's criminal justice, quality of life, and income and wealth. And this report lays out the opportunity our region has as it relates to expanding opportunity so that all Buffalonians get a quality education and a good job, of course. So, and also I just want to, you know, lift up the support for the Buffalo Niagara Partnership initiatives in workforce development. We're doing a lot of work in this area and lifting people up from low-paying jobs into better positions, and we're doing initiatives with regard to that are looking at, you know, inequity in the area. So we're doing a lot of great work early in that area. A lot of pilots are taking place, and understand it takes time and effort to do that. But those are some of the things we're doing in the community right now, and I would invite other business leaders to help support the initiatives that I just talked about.
All right. Do either of you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No. Thank you for putting this together, and thank you, Paul, for your honesty for your openness, and I look forward to hearing the final interview.
Yeah, and I, again, thank you, Stephen, for you know, partaking in this also. It helps me grow as a man and a white person to hear directly, you know, the experiences that that you've had over your lifetime, and I would love to have the opportunity to learn more about that and have a discussion with you with regard to these issues and how we get Buffalo into a better space and turn things around that make us more inclusive and make everything more inclusive here in the Buffalo area for everybody.